Welcome to the National Awakening Conference call. My name is Marlon Sharp. I'm the National Field Director for STAND, and here's your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Thank you so much, Pastor Marlon, and thank you all for joining us again. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. This is our first call in a while because we've been caught up with Project 76 Standathon. But we'll have another call next Tuesday in which that will be the day preceding Constitution Day. And we have a very, very special guest today. So let me say a word of prayer and bring him on. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this wonderful country you've given us. And we know, Lord, that you said every good and perfect gift comes from above, from the Father of lights, in whom is no variation nor shadow of turning. And we know a country like the United States of America that's provided more freedom, more opportunity, more hope, more prosperity, a higher standard of living than any other nation that's ever existed would not exist without it being a gift from you. But we have people in our country, Lord, who don't acknowledge that. They don't like our country. In fact, many even hate our country. And they particularly hate the godly foundation. We just had a senator even speak to that and say he finds it disturbing. And so, Lord, help us to preserve this constitutional republic. Thank you so much for leaders like Bob McEwen, former congressman who serves in such an important and influential leadership role in so many venues to help call our attention to what we need to know and how we need to be thinking in order to make sure that our country is not lost. And so we thank you for America. And Lord, this is Constitution. We're coming up to Constitution Day, and we've declared this at STAND, Celebrate American History Month. So we're focusing all month on themes that deal with our history and its nobility and its inspiration to the world. While there are others we know are burning the flag and denouncing our country and calling for its destruction. So, Lord, we really believe that we will have victory over these evil forces that seek to destroy one of the greatest gifts ever given to mankind. And we thank you and praise you that you brought us almost a quarter of a millennium already and that our Constitution has been in effect for 238 years, the most successful governing document in the history of mankind. And we are so very grateful. And we believe that you didn't bring us this far to leave us. And we count on you, Lord, to secure the future of our nation. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, folks, this is a very special time. We've declared to celebrate American History Month because we really believe that the American people need to be unified around our common heritage as Americans and the wonderful legacy we've been given. Again, I know our country is not perfect. Anybody who thinks it is or has been, it would be a fool. But when you compare it to the rest of the world, there's no question that our country is about as close to heaven as you're going to get on earth. So our guest today is an historian and economist, former congressman. He is the head of the Council for National Policy, and he has advised presidents of the United States and continues to be someone that that people turn to for wisdom and insight and understanding on a whole host of issues affecting our country and its future. And he's also a dear friend of mine, Bob McEwen. Bob, again, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. We ask you because this is Celebrate American History Month, and we knew we couldn't get any better guest to talk about that than you, sir. So thank you very, very much for taking time to be with us. In fact, I want to try to leave time for you to tell the story of the Star Spangled Banner because I've just never heard it better told. And it frankly thrills me every time I hear you tell it. But look, first of all, again, thanks for taking time. And let's start out with this question. Do we have a problem in our country with Americans not knowing or understanding our history?
Well, EW, like I say, as everyone knows, how much I appreciate your friendship and value your confidence and advice. And you're one of the few Harvard lawyers that I will listen to. But I am a big, big fan, as you know. But you said something, you kind of stole my line. You said America's not perfect. Let me just say, excellence is good. Perfection is a curse. And if you expect your wife, if you expect your boss, if you expect your children to be perfect, everybody's going to be miserable because we're not perfect. Mm-hmm. And when you put 300 million people, imperfect people together, then you can find things to gripe about. But we strive toward excellence. And as you then said, the next sentence that you said is 100% correct as well. America is imperfect compared to what? Only compared to perfection. And I often, sometimes when I'm on television and things and do a call-in program particularly, I just mention America being a Christian nation. I just do it because it triggers them. And they call in, well, it's not a Christian, this is separation of church. And then I ask this question, which nation on earth is more Christian than America? And then they have to stop and think. So America's not perfect compared to what? Where is a place where a person can come with nothing and have greater opportunity to make something of themselves than this country? Why is it that Elon Musk came from South Africa, he comes and he sleeps under his desk, he goes for weeks and weeks and weeks, never having a place to stay, working, and ends up the richest man on the planet, supplanting another man who was the richest man on the planet, who was also an American? Why is it that this happens over and over and over? I ask the question, has there never been a Thomas Edison in the history of all of China? China and India are half of the population of the world. Put all of us together, it's not as many as there are just in China and India. Why is it that there aren't any Charlie Goodyears that invented the use of rubber there? Why was it Willis Carrier in America invented the air conditioner here? There are skyscrapers all over the world because Elisha Otis invented the elevator in America. So I just struggle with these kids that want to complain about America compared to what? Where else do they have to put guns on the border to keep people out? in socialist countries, they put guns and walls and cut glass and barbed wire on the borders to keep people in because people want out. In this country, we have to keep our hand against the door to say you have to come through the proper channels. You just can't be climbing over the wall here. You've got to go through the door. Why? Because it's the greatest place in the history of mankind. And why is it? It's because it was founded on a principle that you mentioned. Governor Kane, now Senator Kane, a successor of Thomas Jefferson in the governor's mansion, a successor of James Monroe, a successor of James Madison, this man from Virginia that should know better than anyone that our rights don't come from an armed mob. They don't come from elite jurists. They don't come, they come from one source, the standard, the principle of right and wrong, who gave us life and then liberty. And liberty was God's idea. It wasn't man's idea. It was God said. And so based upon that, we call that truth, not opinion, truth. And there's only one source of truth. I am come that you might have life, that we know the source of life, and I am the way, the truth. So we know that what God says is true. Everything else is just opinion. So the founders got together and said, we're going to hold these basic principles, these truths that come from our Creator. He's the one that gave us. So therefore, everything will be downhill from there. So this little 4% of the population of the world creates more goods and services than the rest of the world, than a third of all of them in the entire planet, but more copyrights and inventions than the rest of the world combined. So this place is a fountain for righteousness and for goodness. And this guy from Virginia, we have to stop and think, you know, he had to be, what kind of mindset he had, because out of all the people that Hillary Clinton could choose as a running mate, she chose him. So he naturally believes that these don't come from God. And he said, it's frightening that someone would say that these rights come from God. Well, the person that said that, and all of our founders signed on to it, was Thomas Jefferson. You think that he would know that. So that's what makes America such that you could leave your bicycle in the front yard for overnight and not have to worry about it. You could wander the streets at all hours of the night and not be concerned that safety and beauty comes I've mentioned that my wife, when we're traveling and people come up and say, you know, I've been to America, I know America, and she said, what impressed you the most, or what startled, or what surprised you the most? And the answer, pardon me, the answer what they said was the fact that you don't have walls around your property in America. In America, you don't know where your yard starts and where your neighbor's begins. And I just returned from Colorado Springs, and the road that goes from the main highway up to the Broadmoor Hotel that was built back at the turn of the century, all those wonderful homes that used to be, and when you drove through there, you could see these nice houses, and virtually now all of them. And in this last trip, you could say there are another three or four that had put up walls around their houses. Why? Because we are having diversity. That is, instead of a godly value system that respects life because God made you, they come in. They can't say that this culture that is so wonderful, where we blend in the traffic instead of cutting each other off and instead of stealing from folks and all, that this great American culture that creates all this goodness, rather than saying, let's destroy it, here's what they say. They say that we need to diversify it. That diversity is our strength. And so a country where when the husband dies, they take the wife and they throw her on the funeral pyre and they burn her up too, America would be better if we had that. In these countries where they have walls around their property and they have cut glass on top of the walls, diversity, bring them in. That'll make it better for us. Well, it doesn't. It was the godly value system of the American culture that made things great. And diversity, and you and I know this, Bishop, that diversity is chaos. That it's unity is strength. And why do you have a huddle before every football play? Why do the football players get in a huddle? They get in a huddle for one reason: to prevent diversity. That is, when you snap that ball, everybody's not running in their own direction, doing what they want to do. They have unity. They know what everybody's going to do and do it together. And it was the unity that made us America what it was, and that source of that unity was a godly value system. And when people say that diversity is our, when we destroy that, and that country, so that we now have poverty, the first time I ever saw it was people living literally on the streets, living under a blanket with a blanket tied to a fence, was when I was in India in the 1970s. And as I walked around some of those buildings, saw these people just there. And of course, a value system that you see a little child listlessly laying there starving to death, and people would just step over top of it because they wanted the child to die so that it could then go to the next level or whatever. And America would rescue that child. And America would rescue those people. And now we begin to see that as we step away from God, that those same pictures of people living in tents, people living under a blanket in the streets of Washington, D.C., of San Francisco, of Los Angeles, bringing the idea that diversity, becoming like that, rather than Vivek Ramaswamy is running for governor in Ohio, and he told about how that as a young child, his father would send he and his cousins back to India to spend 5 or 6 weeks with their grandparents and their in-laws and all, and they told about just as I described to you, and he said that now that he's an adult, those places now have running water. They have clean water, and they have air conditioning. They had the things that his father wanted to say. Here's what America has to offer versus what they had. He said, now when you come back to America, the things that he never saw before, that were 30 years ago in India, are now in our country because we're doing this diversity. And if what has taken place is, that is, I believe, in my judgment, we've hit bottom. And we've bounced back, and people are saying enough. And we're saying all around the country, we begin to see church attendance going up. We've got righteousness. This idea of all these sexual diversions are now being amended. And you see parents asserting themselves in the schooling. And virtually, I would struggle actually to look at any particular area in the last year and a half to recently, Bishop, that I think the American people have said enough, and they're returning to God. This year, Bible sales While all book sales are up 2% over last year, Bible sales are up 22%. And on college campuses, we're seeing people coming to the Lord. And in Ohio State University, the national football team was out there with a cattle trough filled with water, and as they would give their testimony, invite people to come forward, they could give their heart to the Lord or baptize them right there in the quad of the university. It's happening across the country. Lots of good things are happening as we do what? Get back at this time of a constitutional convention where we celebrate our founding, when we see what did they see? What did these little people, and here's the point we have to remember about the rich and the poor and all this. People, nobody came to America because they sold their castles, got in a clipper ship, and came to eke out an existence in the forest. The people that came here were refugees in every conceivable way. What they wanted was a godly value system with opportunity. And people said, well, my people came there poor. Everybody did. Everybody came here. The richest man in the world, let's go back to Andrew Carnegie, and he found, bought a series of steel mills and formed the U.S. Steel Corporation and made him the richest man in the world. Came here as a 12-year-old with $6. And from that, what did we give him? Nothing. What he had was opportunity and a godly value system where you signed a contract and you were expected to honor it. And thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lie. And then number 10 is as important as any, thou shalt not covet. Socialism is the principle of coveting. You vote for me, make me mayor of New York, I will steal from this guy, and I'll give you groceries. I'll make sure that you don't have to pay your rent when you live in that man's building. We'll just take it from him. And that's what covetousness is. That's what socialism is. And we had it on every school board, thou shalt not covet. That's why you didn't need walls around a person's property, because you didn't want to steal the guy's house. You didn't have to have protection. You say, someday, I want to have a house like that. And I made a reference. I was in Central America, a wonderful, wonderful, godly man, the attorney general of the country. And I was there for the presidential prayer breakfast to speak at the breakfast. And we went out to dinner, just the attorney general and his wife and my wife and Liz, the four of us. We were out, and as the girls went into the restaurant, we stood outside, and Juan Edgar kept talking and talking, and I after a while sort of indicated, you know, the food's inside, it's not out here on the street, but basically, yeah, just a minute, and eventually somebody sort of materialized out of somewhere, I don't know where, and he walked up, and I saw the attorney general give him money, and then we went into the restaurant. What he did was he hired a person to watch his car while we're in the restaurant, because they did not go to school where on the wall it said, thou shalt not steal. The principle of a godly Christian value system that is the mark of the United States of America under our Constitution, that is what needs to be preserved. And as I said, I think we were wandering from it. We've been frustrated with it, and people have been attacking it. People like Senator Kaine from Virginia, people didn't appreciate it. But EW, I think there's a revival that's taking place where people are embracing again those very truths that make this the lighthouse for the gospel and the hope of the world. If I can just escape to, and I use the reference, Jews have been chased all over the planet, chased out of this country and chased out of that country. But they knew that under American flag, it said we protect life. If they could just get to America, then their lives would be protected. And that's what made this conglomerate of people from around the globe the greatest place in the history of mankind, just like you said.
Now, once President Trump, who is very much a part of this whole movement that you just outlined, who would have thought it, right, that President Donald J. Trump, that we all knew before he became president, and primarily this billionaire playboy and builder, but he is really kind of leading the charge on this. How should we think about what happens when he is no longer president?
Well, I think that there was a wilderness in which we thought diversity, where you didn't stand for something, you just compromised all the time, that somehow or another we begin to learn that doesn't work. and that you've got to stand up and take a stand. And he has found a running mate who shares that as well. He's found a Secretary of State that shares that as well. Mm-hmm. And there is a team of people, energy. Now, EW, we hate to, for people listening on the phone call here, they're going to think that the Middle Ages, but we actually remember a half a century ago when there were gas lines, when Jimmy Carter made it possible. Here we are a half a century later. We know that we have more natural gas deposits. We have more oil deposits than any place on the planet. We're number one in gas, gas, oil, and coal. This nation has abundant, abundant energy. And yet, because of socialism, he was able to make it such that we had gas lines, that you could only buy gas on Thursdays and Tuesdays, and you could only get it before 3 in the afternoon, and after that, you're out of light. We're able to foul it all up. Ronald Reagan came in and put it all back in order. But what we're seeing is that Donald Trump has people at the Department of Energy, where we're going to need twice as much electricity 8 years from now as we need today. Now, how do you double the size of the grid? I'm telling you, if you had all of these bedwetters that are trying to decide as to what the environmental this and that and the other thing, it would never have ever happened. What Donald Trump said, when you're building these data centers, build your own power plant right there, and we'll approve it. And America, in because of our Secretary of Energy, because of our Secretary of Interior, because of a Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War who got laid off under the Biden administration because he had a cross tattooed on his chest. He was in the military, and they expelled him because he had a cross on his chest. Well, that's the perversion that swept through the military has now been swept away, and so we see a Secretary of Defense that's committed to restoring the Bible studies again in the Pentagon and across the military. We see a Secretary of Defense doing away with inflation, restoring the value of the dollar, which is a question of integrity. We have a Secretary of State that doesn't apologize for righteousness, but stands boldly spiritually in America's tradition. So what you said about because of the changes of a New York, and let me just say a little something about Donald Trump. Everything that first of all, he does act like a New Yorker. He is strong and outspoken and all the rest, and he's not unique in that. Anybody who has ever spent any time in New York or had any New Yorkers move into their neighborhood or restaurant knows that they are not shrinking violets. You won't mistake them for Southern Illinois farmers. So he does have that temperament, and quite frankly, the reason I don't criticize it is because I don't know anyone less bold than he is that could have done what he did. Mm-hmm. I like to think that he could be a sweet little Ronald Reagan and accomplish it, but I'm not sure he could. He understands that New York press and those folks in Washington and Hollywood were out to destroy him. And the harder they pushed, the harder he pushed back, number one. But number two, well, let's talk about spiritually, though. It is true. It is true that when he was in his 40s, he got divorced. He went bankrupt. His father died, and his life became unbalanced. He has now since been married to his current wife more than he was married to the first two combined. Everything that they complain about him doing, all was prior to 30 years ago. So, and there are many people listening to our call, Bishop, that would not want 100% of everything we ever said or did 30 years ago brought up for the world to consider. But here's an interesting thing about it. They've gone through all of the books, and they've gone to all of the folks, and this whole situation with Epstein, for example. I saw them interview Epstein's attorney, and he said three different times, I went to Epstein, and I told him, the only hope that you have is if you've got something on Donald Trump, if there's something that we can use to leverage on and he said, there is absolutely nothing. There is absolutely, and here they've spent all of these years going against him for all of, and they still can't come up with anything. So he's an above-average man with above-average talent, and who's going to supplant him? I think that there is a revival. I see with Charlie Kirk on the college campuses. Bishop, between 18 and 29, that demographic of males, of young men between 18 and 29, is the most conservative, most pro-American demographic in the entire nation. And second to that is then comes the girls, the females, not as much as the males, but then those that are the most liberal and the most leftist are those in my category, which is the baby boomers, the old people. They're the ones still trying to hang on to the New Deal and think that it works. These young people that have gone through COVID, they've gone through the chaos that we've seen in our big cities where Giuliani and those folks cleaned up New York, and now they've watched it turn it right back into a spiral. They watched Newsom take the most beautiful city in the world, San Francisco and LA, and turn it into places where you get up. There's an app in San Francisco. You can see where the human feces is to avoid it on the sidewalk if you're inviting people to come over. They've seen all that, and they're ready to go back to the principles that made this the greatest hope of mankind. And I see it happening over and over and over. I've never, and this isn't hyperbole or political enthusiasm, I am more optimistic about America at this moment than I have ever been in my entire life. The American people, in my opinion, particularly young people, are seeing what to do right. And for most of our lifetimes, young people you never counted on, you didn't even try to expect them. They said they're not going to shape up until they get married or have a job, and then they'll start to be. But in the meantime, they're going to be trouble and roaming around. Young people are saying, no. I want church attendances up. I want a church that teaches the Bible. I want to have structure. I want to have beauty again. And I think this is a great time to celebrate our Constitution as the bedrock of this hope for mankind.
So in that sense, then we are on a wave that is really bigger than Donald Trump or bigger than any of us, that God is doing something in the country, and you're saying it's having impact across the board. And I couldn't agree with you more. There's more reason to be optimistic now than at any time I can remember in my political life in this country. So I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. Well, look, what should the folks listening on this call, the people who will hear it later on recorded, what should they be thinking and doing right now in terms of you don't want people to lay down, obviously, and say, oh, well, you know, it's all over. We got it. We're done. We're good. But they don't need to be bitter, angry, hateful, despairing either. So what's your advice to them?
Well, I appreciate the question, and when you've been getting beaten and it's all the way through, and we're now entering the fourth quarter, and you're 2 points ahead, you have a reason. When you were down 20 points at the end of the first quarter, and you thought this is over, and yet now you're slightly starting to come ahead, you have reason to be encouraged, but the game is not over. And the opposition is going to give everything they have for this final few minutes of the game, and so everybody, whether it be China, and they're funding these people that have already destroyed most of Europe by taking away its Christian culture, they're going to key in on our major cities to take away and bring chaos to Los Angeles and to Chicago and to New York. And here's the point, Bishop, is that we as God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians in America could smash any of this opposition in a moment. But half of the people I just described, people that wash their car, mow their lawn, pay their taxes, and coach Little League and teach Sunday school, those people, half of them, most of the evangelical believers in America are not registered to vote. That means that they never, ever vote. And of those half that are registered to vote, half of them do not vote. And so here we are with these narrow margins, just a little bit, barely making here, and 10,000 could change the success in Wisconsin, and 23,000 could change all of Pennsylvania. When we have 45 million Bible-believing Christians that do not vote, and that's the key. that they say, what can I do? Maybe you and I can't change the world. Maybe we can't build a space force that fortunately Donald Trump understood was important to protect us against missiles that where the fights are going to come in any future wars. Maybe we can't do all that. But I'll tell you what we can do. We can make sure that everybody in our Sunday school class, we can make every, and what we tell pastors, we're not going to ask you to do anything else, but just tell the people in your church, get 100% of them. You can do this. This isn't complicated. Get 100% of those people to register to vote. And when God's people show up at the polls, they know what to do. Easiest thing in the world, just life. If a person, let me just make this abundantly clear for anybody that's listening. Any politician that will take innocent life will not hesitate to take your liberty. And so that's, you can ask them, whether they're running for school board, running for sheriff, running for, no matter what they're, ask them where they stand on life. And, for, and if you, you know 90% of what you need to know about that person on that. So if we register people to vote, get people who believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then this country will be strong forever. But the opposition, when Satan comes in like a flood, the Lord will raise up a standard against him. And so that's why we want to be prepared to do that. And that's what we can do, and we must do.
Well, Bob, you are certainly providing tremendous leadership in that regard. And look, buddy, I'm not blowing smoke at you. People like you are why the rest of us can be inspired about the future of our country, because I know you're going to be here fighting no matter what. And so God bless you for it. Keep up the good work. Anything I can do to come alongside you, of course, all you got to do is let me know. And thanks for joining us and supporting Project 76 Standathon. And you're going to be one of our guests on Constitution Day as well. So I encourage people to make sure that you tune in for that. That's next Wednesday, Constitution Day. Bob's going to be one of our early guests in the course of that day. So, Bob, thank you so much, man. Please give my love to your beautiful wife, and God bless you. Just keep on doing what you're doing.
Well, and the same to you and Theodora, but Bishop, you're the Marine. You're the leader. You're the one that we are falling behind. Thank you for the stand that you've taken that all of us can rally around. It takes leadership to make a difference, and all of us can do our part, but there are particular people that can rally the rest of us to lock our arms and march forward. That's what God has gifted you in, and that's what you have accepted that privilege and responsibility faithfully, and I'm honored to be your friend. See you, brother.
Thank you, Brooke. God bless you, man. Thank you. Well, folks, Bob McEwen, I think one of the greatest Americans in our culture today. He didn't get a chance to do it, but if you've never heard him tell the story of the Star Spangled Banner, folks, believe me, you want that. I'm sure he tells that. On Constitution Day, so make sure you tune in for that, because it's just one of the most inspiring renderings of that whole story of the Star-Spangled Banner that I've ever heard. Folks, we're not going to take questions because he's gone, and my schedule today is absolutely slammed, so let me just say this to you. This is day 68 of Project 76. We're asking people for three things: to pray, to volunteer, and to give. We ask you to pray for us, pray for our organization, pray that God will provide us the resources that we need to keep doing what we're doing. Asking you to volunteer. I've established two major categories, and there are others that maybe just fit your talent, whatever abilities you have, and you want to volunteer to help us. But the two is creating a stand chapter, which you can do in your city, your town, your county, or being a stand ambassador. And a stand ambassador is just somebody who agrees to be a spokesperson for stand in your local community on issues. You don't have to try to organize people. You can just do this on your own. The only thing we're going to ask of you is just stay plugged into us, and we will meet with our ambassadors. If we get that going, we'll meet with our ambassadors from time to time to just update them on what we're doing nationally. And then you can represent that in your local community. And that doesn't take anything but staying connected to us and just sharing it with your family, your friends, your church, your neighbors, whoever you have an opportunity to. And so it's a very, very simple task, but will allow you a platform for the things that I know you feel passionately about because you're tuned into us because you feel the same way we do here. And then lastly, give. We've asked people for $1 a day for the 76 days. It's only $76, or whatever you can give. My wife and I don't mind telling you all, but my wife and I committed to $100 a day for the 76 days, and we contributed that $7,600. And I don't say that to brag or to compete, because believe me, that was not an easy lift for us, but we just felt like we can't ask others to do something, and then we're not doing anything. And I really believe this, folks, that if you've never given to the point where it's uncomfortable for your flesh, then you really haven't done anything to impress God, because God wants us to let him know in our giving that we trust him for our needs rather than trusting ourselves or anything else. And so we really believe that you give, it will be given to you, full measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. God will cause it to be given into your bosom, and God has been very, very faithful to me and to my wife in that. So we're asking you to give whatever you can. Believe me, we will appreciate it. Look, there are people who can give $100,000 a day for 76 days. Believe me, I pray that those people will arise and make what we've given look like peanuts. So we're not trying to compete or compare. I'm just saying, you know, give as God lays on your heart. Become a monthly donor, $5 a month. We have a number of those people who give $5 a month. And believe me, that's a great encouragement to us. You might think, well, but that's not going to help you. It does help us, because it helps us psychologically and spiritually, because we know that there are people out there, they're giving $5 a month. That's probably the very best they feel they can do, but they're doing that. They're doing their part. And Jesus was pleased with the widow's mite, not because it was a lot of money, but because she gave all that she had. So whatever you can do to pray, to volunteer, and to give, please do. And then make sure you tune in when Constitution Day will be on from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. all day long. You'll hear Bob McEwen again. He'll give that story about the Star-Spangled Banner. Matt Staver will be on with us. Andrew Walmack will be on with us. Brandon Tatum, who you all know, he's a big social media influencer, former police officer, worked with Turning Point USA and a number of other organizations. He'll be on with us. My son will be on with us. My wife will be on with us talking about our school, the Maximum Potential Christian Academy, and a number of others. Nutrimax is one of our big sponsors. In fact, they are a major sponsor for Constitution Day. They will be on with us to talk about how they run their company as Christians and the difference that makes. So it's going to be a very, very big day, folks. And you're going to, believe me, you will be inspired. And I know nobody can sit and listen for 7 hours straight, but please be sure you have it. Maybe put it on your computer and let it run all day as you're moving about, or when you come home, if you're going to work, when you come home, put it on, whatever you need to do. But please make sure you tune in and catch whatever parts of it you can, because this is the conclusion of Project 76 Standathon. And two other things I'll say. Number one is, at the end of the day, we are having a citizen's oath to the Constitution ceremony. And we're going to invite everybody to sign the citizen's oath to the Constitution. It's not a mandatory government-required oath. It is an oath for those citizens, unlike me and public officials. I took that oath in the Marine Corps, took that oath once in Massachusetts as a public official. But this is a citizen's oath. This is a voluntary oath to the Constitution of the United States for all those people who maybe never had that experience before. So you'll have an opportunity to do that at the end of the day. That's going to be during the 6 o'clock hour when I will be on by myself. And that's one of the things that I will do during that hour. So the citizen's oath to the Constitution. And also, let's see, Constitution Day, was there something else I was leaving out? Something else I've left out, but the Citizens Oath of the Constitution is part of that. Constitution Day, we are calling for a federal holiday, that Constitution Day be made a federal holiday. because it is a unifying day. I mean, everybody knows about Juneteenth, and with all due respect, Juneteenth is a Texas deal. But, you know, I understand. We know they're pandering to the whole diversity deal. But this is a unifying holiday. All of us are under the Constitution of the United States. If you weren't in Texas or your family doesn't come from Texas, you don't know anything about Juneteenth because that was a Texas event. Presumably the day that the slaves in Texas learned that they had been liberated. But that wasn't true for the rest of the country. But the Constitution affects all of us because we all live under the rule of law, and the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and it's the most successful governing document in the history of mankind. Because look, folks, 15% of the American people even know the Constitution was passed on September 17th, and it is the second most important day in American history. The second most important day, and only 15% of the people even know the Constitution was passed on September 17th. July 4th is the first, because that's when the country was founded. But even then, we know we weren't independent at that point. We had 5 years of war to get free of Great Britain. And then September 17th, 11 years later, when we finally established the framework of the government that would govern this independent nation. Those are the two founding days of our country. And everybody knows about one, and very few know about the other. We need to change that. Help us do that. That's why we're asking for your help. That's why we're asking for your prayers. We've got to unify this nation. Bob McEwen just said it, and Jesus said it this way in Proverbs 12:25. He said, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. We don't need diversity. We're already the most diverse nation in the history of the world. We need unity. And unity is around principle, not around race, not around ethnicity, not around demography, not tribalism, but unity is what we need in this country. And this is one more symbol of unity that I think could bring the American people together in a major way to celebrate the passing of the Constitution of the United States. So look, anything you all can do to help us is much appreciated. Thank you for being on this call. God bless each and every one of you. We love you. We're praying for you. And we know we're unified in praying for the preservation and thriving of this great nation that God has gifted us. And this is what we've got to do to make sure we maintain it. We've got to stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up, knowing that we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.